go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We're back! We're back! It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth?
I'm good, man. Look at, no one can see you except for me and our guests, but you are looking healthy, my friend. You are looking like a man who spent some time in the sun, but with an appropriate level of sunblock on.
I put on like 98 sunscreen. It's just like you open the bottle and the shirt comes out. It's just all, it's
wearing
great.
An old-timey diver outfit on the beach.
I had,
around.
You know what? I had the fucking, I have the dad hat. On the beach with like the floppy hat with the brim that goes all the way around, right? Because there's like skin cancer in my family, so I have to be vigilant. No, I have to respect the sun, whatever the fuck. And like the thing is, like the wind's blowing and the front of the brim is like in my face. It's like if you're not wearing sunglasses and you're in your car and you put the visor down, you're like, well, this is safe. I'm just blocking my view of the road entirely so that I don't have to see the sun. This is going to work. It was like that, but with a hat. So I was like, you know what? I say to my wife, I was like, you know what? Maybe I need to become a straw hat guy. Like, maybe I need to go the full Bobby Bowden.
The words that every wife wishes to hear.
Yeah. Like, maybe I need to be the dude who wears a fucking straw hat in the sun and then sits in a fucking golf cart all day by a football. So I go into like the
fanning yourself with the copy of the racing form. I think that's a good look for you.
So I go into the beach shop with all like, you know, like I go past like all the Let's Go Brandon shirts and all that shit. And they have regular straw hats, but then they also have ones that look like the fucking the bowl of soup hat in Caddyshack. And they have one that like it's the proper brim, like Brian Billick style, but it's got on the underside of the brim, it's got the Maryland flag design, which is nice. Ugly as shit. But I put it on and I look at it, and motherfucker, it is the worst looking thing. Like I look old in hats. I looked like I was fucking 90. So I'd rather have skin cancer than look that shit. So I
surely there has to be another way. Anyway, yeah, let's introduce our guest before we
we should do that, because our guest today, oh my god, it's Defector supervising producer and Normal Gossip co-creator Alex Sujung Laughlin. Hi, Alex.
Wow. Hello. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here.
We are excited to have you, and we are talking to you as Normal Gossip is in the middle of the tour. Are you on the road? Is it hard? Are you breaking down, miss all your miss your family and like the party?
Yeah, the song Faithfully by Journey, is that real?
Yeah, I did want to ask. Like, are you wanted dead or alive, Alex?
So I am. I'm actually home for 2 days in between Philly and Chicago. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing because my cat had just not left my chest the entire time I've been here, except for right now when I'm sitting upright.
Oh wow! It's like my reflux, but a human, like in creature form.
It's not like your reflux. That is wrong, Drew. I'm sorry. I mean, it's a friend.
When I have the reflux, it feels like a creature is sitting on my chest. So I don't think it's that sure. Different, really. Except a cat is like a friend. And
yeah. Alex, have you had a lot of experience in your life sitting at a table and using sound effects in front of a sold out large venue? Is this the first time that you've had to do that?
Yeah, this would be the first time that I have been on stage and making like rim shot noises
for 1,000 strangers. Yeah,
with a squirrel hat on my head.
That was my favorite part. I wanted to say I went to the New York show. We all did.
Yeah,
and my favorite part was Alex putting on a squirrel hat and lighting a siren from her table, and like everyone got all a Twitter. When they were like, oh, it's squirrel hat time.
Yeah, you don't need us to like boost your shit because you're selling everything out. But like, it's a real as I said to when I was talking to Eric last week, like, it's a proper theatrical experience. Like, it is not, as live podcasts go, there's kind of a lot of fun extra stuff going on.
Yeah, like, I went to Aida on Broadway and didn't have as good of a time. Like, I'm serious. I'm not even fucking kidding you. Who would have guessed I enjoyed Normal Gossip more than a musical? Not me.
Not me, for sure.
Are you enjoying it, Alex? Like, this is like a Pat question maybe, but like, I know that you and Kelsey are not necessarily people that want to get up and tap dance in front of 1500 people.
That is Kelsey McKinney, the co-host of Normal Gossip.
Yes. The host.
Yeah.
No, we're both really enjoying it. It's kind of a mindfuck to be like perceived on such a level where you're like, oh, all these people are seeing my face and my body. and also like a lot of pictures are being taken and I don't have control over the angle that they're taken. And I'm like, I don't want to see that picture of me. But like being on stage, like it's fun. Like we're having a good time. It is vastly different from the job that we both signed up to do, which was to produce a podcast in our homes alone.
I didn't expect to be popular. This sucks.
Now we're like doing makeup in a dressing room and we're like, you know, where's my setting spray? Like I need to look beautiful. It's very different from
all the showbiz stuff is like extra funny to me, I guess, because I mean, I don't know you as well as I know Kelsey, but I've worked with her for a long time and this is not it like the vibe of someone in a lanyard being like, you can come backstage, you not.
Yes.
Like that is not a thing that I would associate with Kelsey's broader vibe. But Justin Ellis, our coworker, hit me and Drew with that when we were going by town hall. Like he let Kelsey's husband go backstage.
But not
and then,
you guys?
We didn't have a pass. He was just sort of like, hey, but you guys can't come back here. And I was like,
it was kind of bullshit, Roth. I mean, didn't they know
that's hilarious.
Who I was. One more question, Alex. Does your tour rider forbid brown M&Ms in the green room? And
oh
how many
God.
Hotel rooms have you trashed, by the way? I mean, we have to get to that.
I've trashed no hotel rooms because I'm
not rocking Raul.
We do have a writer, though, which is fucking hilarious. And the only things that are on our writer are sour candies and salt and vinegar chips. Nice. So our tongues are just torn up.
I was going to say, you got to activate every part of the tongue there. That's how
you do have that. If you eat too many of the salt and vinegar potato chips and your mouth is just like shattered.
Yes, that's what my mouth has been. I think we should have thought better.
This is what they meant about life on the road being hard. You know?
Yeah, exactly. My poor tongue.
Just imagining that every Motley Crue song is about eating too many Sour Patch Kids.
Let's get to the nut of the show, because the reason we had you on, Alex, you know, every episode of every podcast is really essentially about the podcast itself. And to that end, our podcast today is going to be about the state of podcasting, because Alex, you wrote a story for Defector earlier this month about the demise of Gimlet Media, which was once a huge name in podcasting before Spotify acquired them and then just now essentially liquidated them. Can you tell us what was Gimlet and why did it matter?
Okay. You know, I'm thinking I should have prepped a little better.
Yes, you should have.
As disagree. Opposed to no, watching disagree. The Bachelorette, which is how I prepped for this.
Oh, you know what? I forgive you. Who can resist?
Anytime you feel like you're out over your skis, just start describing stuff from the Bachelorette episode and we'll
amazing.
Have that.
I don't like that Tayden. He's bad.
Okay, so Gimlet was a company founded by Alex Bloomberg and Matt Lieber. Bloomberg was a former producer for Planet Money and This American Life, which matters because those were shows that kind of invented the narrative, like sort of prestige podcast genre that came to exist more broadly in the podcast industry. Before Gimlet, podcasting, especially narrative podcasting in this style, the sort of long form, like investigative podcast, really only existed within the public media system. And so when Alex Bloomberg started Gimlet, this was one of the first forays into a sort of for-profit model that podcasting had taken. And so they launched a bunch of shows in 2014 when they were founded and continue to launch shows and acquire shows. And also, really importantly, they launched a branded studio where they made similar types of like high touch, high quality shows for companies, which meant that they made money. And that kind of established a model for the podcasting industry more broadly. And a lot of other companies sprung up sort of in that model.
Can I go back for a second? Did you mean when you said they meant, when you said that they made podcasts for companies, do you mean like internal company corporate communications?
No, I mean like.
Okay, because now that's an idea.
Let's just say like, that's a thing that exists for sure. I have made those shows too.
I bet they're great.
Oh my God. Let me tell you later about the Google show I made once.
We are going to ask about that.
It was like, let's just say like Microsoft wants its own serial about like how, I don't know, people start businesses using Microsoft tools. Like that is a show that like the Gimlet branded studio would make.
Okay. All right. So advertorial stuff. Oh wait. Yes. So can we take a moment here to talk about the Google show? Are you allowed to, or will Sergey Brin come and kill you if you do that?
Either he will kill me or I will get slapped with some kind of like NDA violation, I'm sure. But suffice it to say, it was not a podcast. It was a mixtape, a simulated mixtape that we made, and it was a nightmare.
Did you get to do DJ Clue drops and like use the exploding bomb sound effect that Funkmaster Flex? No, you're shaking your head. No,
it was horrible. All right. It was horrible.
That's tough. So no Funk Flex stuff of any kind.
No, sounds romantic to me. Nick and Nora's infinite SEO result sounds really good to me.
But that idea, so this is something that I was talking about with Eric before you came on. And, you know, I thought your story was great. The idea that this was like, so it was a sustainable business for what it was, that they had that kind of high-low thing. The shows were successful. Like Gimlet was working. Is that correct?
So I don't know the business. Like, I don't know the financials of the business because I actually never worked at Gimlet. And I am not an executive there. From what I can tell, it wasn't doing awesome before the Spotify sale.
You said they were running out of money in your purse. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah. They were, you know, it's because these shows, these like high production narrative shows take a year and a half to make. And it's like 6 to 8 episodes. And it's really expensive to make. And
do you have a ballpark figure on that?
At a minimum, $200,000.
Holy
like,
shit.
At a very minimum. That's like an affordable narrative show. So these like shows like, you know, Heavyweight or Mystery Show, which was kind of a cult classic that only did one season, are like incredibly expensive to make. And they, you know, as two fellas in the podcast industry yourselves, you may know that you make money off of podcasts based on ads that you sell. And if you have more episodes to sell ads against, you make more money. When you only have 6 to 8 episodes, no matter how good they are, you can only make so much money on them.
Right. No matter how full of ads they can be.
Right. You can't charge like Super Bowl podcast ad rates.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Was there a way for Gimlet to turn a profit prior to the Spotify sale? Or did their founders essentially set the company up to fail if they were never acquired? Was it the typical, we started the company so it gets bought so we get rich kind of shit?
Yeah. I mean, like the one of the first things they did when they started this company was to seek out VC funding. And so like when somebody seeks out VC funding, that's the beginning of the story. The end is always what's the return on investment.
Right.
That's the reason you get VC funding, is that you expect and your investors expect that you're going to make them money. And
not just a small amount, not a modest like, return.
Yeah, like a lot of money.
Multiples of what you invest.
There are episodes of Startup, which was the podcast that Alex Bloomberg started to document the founding of Gimlet, where he talks to investors, potential investors and advisors about like what is going to be the return? What is the plan for an exit? What does an exit mean? An exit, you know, is like when a company acquires you and they're like, okay, how are you going to position yourself for that? And people are like, okay, you should be an app. Like, you should be making these kinds of shows. Like, this is how you're going to get acquired by Google and make us a shit ton of money.
This was the thing that in reading that story that I felt this kind of sick, familiar feeling, in the sense that that's all of that has applied to the world of, you know, blogs, where mm-hmm. I've spent my, you know, career seems like a kind of a highfalutin word for it. I have periodically been employed within that industry between cyclical periods of unemployment. But it's the same sort of deal that, like, once you get venture capital involved, they want to make money on a venture capital scale. And yeah. It seems, you know, as if in this case, it's with podcasts, as with blogs, as with, you know, whatever, even like streaming video-y stuff. It's very challenging to make the sort of money that these guys want to make. And the more money that you take, the more money you have to make, the bigger an exit you have to make.
Yeah.
And that, it feels like you need that money if you're doing a show that costs $200,000 to produce. You need that money to get off the ground. But then eventually that money is going to be an anchor around your foot.
I think that there's a world in which a version of Gimlet could have existed without VC money, but it would have been much smaller, much humbler of a company. Maybe they launched 3 shows instead of like 7 or however many they launched at the beginning. So I don't think it could have been the giant that it was in the podcast industry without that like heft that the money from VCs gave. But also, like, there is no way when your products that you're making, the podcast, cost that much, there's no way to turn a profit.
Yeah. This, again, it feels like this is the real glum part of it, is that everything sort of starts to feel like not unlike everything else. Like, this is not really different than what Adam Conover and Michael Schur talked to us about in terms of the way that film and television is produced right now.
It's not just media. Like, it's a standard thing where...
Yeah.
The purpose of VC has grown perverted across a lot of industries where, you know, it's not, okay, we're giving you an infusion of cash so you can run a successful business. We'll all share in the profits together. Like, that's sort of, that's mm-hmm. the ideal, right? Or that at least was the ideal at the beginning. That's not the case anymore. It's, okay, we invest $30 million. It gets big enough and visible enough for some asshole acquires it for $300 million. And then we all make money and then it fucks off forever. And we fuck off forever and we don't have to do anything. And what gets forgotten in there, obviously, is the product itself, because the product is optimized not not for the sake of the consumer, but for whoever is going to, you know, on a whim, pay $50 billion for it so they can tweet that, you know, my pronouns are... Bob and Ray or something like that. Like,
yeah, it's like the product gets left behind, but also the workers, the people who are building this thing that becomes worth this much. I mean, selfishly, I feel a lot of empathy and allegiance to the producers who were at Gimlet and then later at Spotify, who just like really got fucked over. You know, some of them got incredibly rich in the acquisition, so like they're fine. But other people did not get rich, either because they were contractors or because they got laid off before any, you know, any big payoff came.
It's also like worth pointing out that those are the people that actually wanted to make podcasts in the first fucking place. That like those are the ones that wind up getting the wrong end of the stick, are the people that actually have some investment in continuing to be able to make that work and not just mm-hmm. cash out and then, you know, live on a fucking like oil derrick in the middle of the ocean where international law doesn't apply to you or whatever the dream is of the funders.
Yeah. By the way, this is where I should disclose that Gimlet interviewed Roth and I to do this podcast for them back in 2020, and they rejected us. So
I will also disclose that I have interviewed for several jobs at Gimlet and have been rejected. So, you know.
A pattern is developing here.
Yes.
I will also disclose that I also applied for a bunch of jobs at Gimlet, but those were the only ones that existed.
Is there anyone else on this Zoom call that has not tried and failed to work for Gimlet Media? If so, just...
I believe everyone else stopped getting shot.
I also want to point out, as the person who currently produces this podcast, Gimlet would never produce this show. I'm so confused. Everything Alex said, it only shows this show is not anything like any of those shows Alex just described. So I don't even know what they were talking to you about.
They didn't do like silly little hangout shows. No. That wasn't a thing that they were interested in doing at all.
Silly little hangout shows.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was all podcasts were, you know.
That's worth something that you could probably, because you've spent more time in the industry and understand it better than us, Alex, is like so of the different forms of podcast, there are, broadly speaking, in my caveman's brain, there's the ones that are like good and take a lot of work. And then there's the ones where it's like a Zoom call that is recorded and maybe edited. And that those are...
This
I
one's
know
not
that
like that, Roth.
I right. Well, it's, you and I have great Zoom calls, Drew.
This one is scripted down to everyone.
We got good editors. But Alex, like, where is the industry sort of trending with this? Because it seems like people... There's a lot of demand for podcasts, and yet it does also seem like there's this consolidation happening that does not seem to be working for the benefit of the people producing or listening to the stuff at this moment.
Totally. I would also agree with Eric that like there are also high production shows that are bad.
Okay.
For sure. And there are great, great shows. Some of my favorite shows. Some of my best friends are shows that are, you know, just like minimally edited chat shows. Anyway, to get off of that soapbox, yeah, I mean, I think that there's a ton of consolidation that you're seeing, especially among the like power players, quote unquote, in the industry, the like biggest networks. You know, we already saw like a version of that with Gimlet and Parcast being acquired by Spotify and The Ringer. These are all networks that made slightly different types of shows, but they all kind of got swallowed up into one giant company. But you also see it with like, you know, The New York Times acquiring Serial Productions. So they're going all in on the like high production narrative shows. So they're continuing to make shows and they have the money to do so. And we'll continue to see those. But we're also just seeing a shit ton of like, you know, interview shows hosted by a celebrity. Yep. Because that's an easy sell to advertisers. And in theory, listeners would be curious. I, for example, got very into the concept of the Anna Delvey podcast. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
Now, is it about her or is it hosted by her?
It's hosted by her.
Fuck yes.
It's hell amazing.
Yeah. Does she do the accent? Does she do
the weird accent? Yes. And the whole thing is she's like, I'm doing these interviews from my apartment on house arrest. And she like asks every guest if they've been arrested and like it could be so good. But unfortunately, Miss Anna Delvey is not, you know, a journalist and she actually has like immense disdain for journalists. So
are you suggesting she's a fraud of some sort?
You know, she is who she is. But that feels like a perfect example of the type of show that we're seeing a lot more of, which is kind of the cynical play for earballs, I call them, as opposed to eyeballs. Without a lot of attention being paid to like what is the craft going into this thing? Like what are we actually hoping to do and say with this podcast?
This all feels very much like something that you would try to sell to a VC guy too, where idea of you're just sort of like, it's Will Arnett and a microphone. Don't bother me. That's the idea.
Exactly.
That's the whole concept. And then you just trust that'll work.
Speaking of half-assing it, Bill Simmons. Simmons sold The Ringer to Spotify for over $200 million a few years ago and is now an executive within that company. And I was actually told, and we keep this a podcast exclusive, because a podcast is where you go to drop shit that's unverified, but you can say it anyway because it's a podcast because no one aggregates it. But I was told that he shoved out a couple of Spotify executives after the acquisition and was able to get basically a cushy no-show executive gig. While he's now an executive at that company, he got his finger in a bit of spotted dick this month when he shat all over former royals Prince Harry and Meghan Markle for taking Spotify's money and producing essentially nothing with it. And if we could, Eric, we'd like to hear the audio of Simmons dragging British royalty, or I should say excommunicated British royalty. Can we hear that clip, please?
Wish I had been involved in the Meghan and Harry leave Spotify negotiation. The fucking grifters. That's the podcast we should have launched with them. I got to get drunk one night and tell the story of the Zoom I had with Harry to try to help him with a podcast idea.
Well, first of all, kudos to Simmons Roth for referencing The Grifters, which was made in 1990, but still counts as an edgy watch for him.
Shout out to young, hot John Cusack. Jim Thompson's entire canon. Yeah.
And Angelica Houston, like, playing his mom and, like, trying to bang him for money and stuff like that.
It's a complicated movie. You don't want to give too much away.
Secondly, Alex, what podcast ideas do we think Bill Simmons ran by Harry in that little meeting?
Oh, man. I got to think of, like, okay, what are, like, the quintessential Ringer-style shows?
Well, there's, like, of course, we watched something 30 years ago.
Exactly. Three boys watched TV. It's kind of a classic method.
Exactly.
Of
it's like
podcast.
Harry talking about, like, shows, or Harry talking about movies of that star, like, a missing mother of some sort.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Ooh, I can't. That idea is too good.
Like, I would. Too good. Too good.
It's like the idea of just Simmons just pushing him in the direction of being like, why don't you break down the NBA draft? You know, or just like coming up with only Simmonsy ideas.
Yeah. Or like, else the classic, just like pushing him to interview people who he finds interesting, which is like the most boring and like very Spotify podcast concept I've ever heard.
Right. It's just famous people and famous people being like, I loved your work in that. Like, so where do you get your ideas? Yeah, I think that would be funnier if somebody that's never had a proper job in their life was asking those questions.
Harry tries to get a job.
Yep. That is actually a decent podcast idea. If he's like on the restocking the pepper bar at a Quiznos.
Yeah. He like interviews a trash collector. He's like, tell me, how'd you get into this?
Yeah. He's got the dirty jobs model is definitely there for him if he wants that lean.
The easiest podcast they could have done. It's just Harry and Meghan just telling stories about how shitty their relatives are. Like, that's all you have to do. Like, because there's an SNL podcast co-hosted by David Spade, where they just talk about, like, behind-the-scenes shit from their time at SNL. And apparently it's fucking great. And, like, that's all you need. If you already have the material on you, I don't want to hear you fucking interview fucking Lizzo. That's not going to do anything for anybody. Who fucking cares? And what's weird is that Simmons is basically right about those two, because I remember, like Meghan would have someone else interview the celebrities for her, and then they would cut her into the podcast as if she was asking.
Wait, really?
Oh my God, are you serious?
That fucking rules. Good for her.
So it's hard for me to find a good actor here. Like, can I still dislike Simmons more than the royal two anyway, Alex?
Oh my God. I don't know. I think that I feel like Harry came off worse in this situation.
Yeah, I could see it. Well, because
the idea of having someone else do the interviews and then you go into a studio and are just like, wow, that's so interesting. Was that good? Did I sound interested? Like, just those little inserts is amazing to me.
I can just hear the production meetings happening, being like, okay, Meghan doesn't actually want to be in the interview, so how can we do this? Yeah. How can we make this work?
Right.
Those poor producers.
She's an Anguilla. She can't actually be there to talk to Oprah. We have to... I should ask before we cut to break. I just want to ask, who grifted Spotify better, Harry and Meghan, Simmons, or the Obamas?
Oh,
Alex,
my God. Oh my God.
Who did a better job taking Spotify for a ride?
I think I'm still going to go with Harry and Meghan because they just made like one show that was not even all the episodes they were contracted to do. And I love that for them.
Honestly, that's praxis to me. The idea of like some like shitty, I mean, it's unfortunate because if you think about how much money that is and like if you spread it across, you know, a few thousand talented people, you've like basically saved an industry.
It was tens of millions of dollars.
But if you give it to two people and then they're just sort of like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that, actually. It's like, that's pretty funny to me. Like,
I do. I want to reach that echelon of wealth where you can just bail on a contract and they fucking pay you anyway. That would rock, kick ass. But you know what? We have to take a break. We're going to come back. We're actually going to talk sports for a brief moment. But before we take a break, I just want to note that this podcast is sponsored by Terrestrial Radio. Now you can take your podcasts on the go, in your car, on your Walkman, even on a boombox at Gold's Gym. And with Terrestrial Radio's disc jockeys. You never have to worry about figuring out what conversation or song you want to listen to, because they'll curate shows for you in real time. That's terrestrial radio, available while you're in line right now at Pep Boys.
They're calling it the most avant-garde sponsorship yet. I love it.
We'll be right back with Alex Sujong Laughlin. We're sponsored this week by Sunsoil, a certified organic, employee-owned CBD oil company from Vermont, an original defector sponsor. Their products are meant to help you relax, fall asleep, and stay asleep. And I know they work because Roth tells me they do. They grow all of their hemp and make their CBD oil at the farm by naturally infusing hemp oil in coconut oil, which involves minimal processing and better retains the whole plant benefits. Sunsoil's CBD gummies are also vegan, gluten-free, and USDA certified organic, which is the highest standard for both quality and traceability. They don't contain any artificial sweeteners or unnecessary additives like food coloring. And you can choose between flavors like berry, lemonade, and cinnamon. So get 50% off your first purchase at sunsoil.com/distraction with the code distraction. That's sunsoil.com/distraction with code distraction for 50% off your first purchase.
The Distraction is also sponsored by BetterHelp. It is so easy to get caught up in what everybody else needs from you and to not take a moment to think about what you might need from yourself. But when we spend all of our time giving, it can leave us feeling stretched thin and burned out. Therapy can give you the tools to find more balance in your life so that you can keep supporting others without leaving yourself behind. If you find the idea of starting therapy daunting, you are not alone. It can be expensive, frustrating, and take a long time to find the right doctor. Even if you find a therapist that's taking new patients, you might have to wait weeks or months for your first appointment. BetterHelp solves for that. It connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on a journey of self-discovery right away. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and affordable. If the doctor you have doesn't work out, you can find another one. All you have to do to get started is create an account and fill out a brief questionnaire, and BetterHelp will match you with a licensed therapist who you can start messaging right away. So if you've been thinking about trying therapy but aren't sure where to start, BetterHelp is a great option to explore. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/distraction today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/distraction.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
And we're back with our own Alex Sujong Laughlin. And we were talking about the state of the podcast industry, which is being, of course, consolidated and made unequal the way that many other businesses are. And it makes us wonder, Alex, is there such a thing as small business in America anymore? Can there be? And I don't mean that in like the, I mean it seriously. I'm not being ironic about it.
Yeah. I mean, I to be clear, I am a co-owner of a small media business, but I didn't have any hand in the founding of it. And, you know, Defector also is its own story about like how it operates and how it was founded. I have worked for smaller media companies that, you know, established themselves without taking any VC. And, you know, it was a fine life. The thing that I struggle with is that like the way those businesses were able to operate was on the basis of a lot of these corporate contracts, these like branded shows. And that itself is a sort of outgrowth of this like Gimlet world. And so, you know, there are ways to have a small business that isn't turning you into a podcast millionaire. It does take like a certain amount of capital to get started though. And like, that's a privilege that some people have that others don't.
It's also, it's quite fragile because I worked at a small advertising firm before I became a blogger and a writer. And I was laid off three times because every time we lost a major client, you know, my boss, Matt would have to let me go. By the third time, he's like, Drew, I can't keep doing this. And I was like, I'm consoling, he's laying me off and I'm consoling him. I'm like, it's okay. It's all right. I got blog life now. I can
blog
deal.
Life.
But yeah. it is like that, where you can have a small business and it can thrive, but as we just learned from the pandemic, you know, one disruption and you're kind of fucked. And that, you know, that's hard, you know, if you're, especially when you know the stats about, particularly about restaurants, you know, like what 80 or 90% of restaurants go out of business in the first year. It's almost like you have no choice but to hope for, you know, an angel investor to come in and help.
Or, well, look, Eric is too modest to jump in here, but he works at a small production company that is a viable business. They produce our podcast here.
Eric, too modest to jump in.
I know.
That's not even me being ironic.
But like, it can.
Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it.
So what does it look like? What is you don't have to be like, what are your margins? Like, what are you benching? Like, I don't need to know that shit. But like, where, like, how does it work when it works?
Yeah, me and Rosillo are just fucking putting up 250 on the clean jerk.
Yeah, that's what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, Alex, you're totally correct. I think there is a certain amount of contracts. I mean, I produce this show for Defector. But I feel like there was that form that existed of the podcast shop where your job was doing it for other people. And now conglomerates bought it. Like, those don't exist anymore because they're all in-house production teams for massive media companies like Pineapple Street and Transmitter or two that come to my mind really quickly for that. So yeah, we do other stuff. I mean, a big thing though, I think we're ignoring and kind of podcasting secret superpower is, one, it's not based on an algorithm because the RSS feed is one-to-one, and two, Patreon and direct support. I don't know if anyone at Defector has heard of that. I don't know if you've heard about that at all, but the thing is, podcasts are the highest percentage of the top 100, 200, 500 Patreons. And also they make the most money per capita, like most money per number of
people.
No
shit.
Yeah. So it's like the direct relationship you make from a podcast, people will contribute. A big thing of why Gimlet's money sank and everyone's in podcasting is because of the pandemic. 2020, there were no ads. All of the ads disappeared. But you know what did happen? Everyone's Patreons went up because listeners started to realize the money that they gave, you know how everyone started buying more small business because of the pandemic? They realized that because of their media as well.
And they started shopping locally for their podcast.
They started shopping locally for their podcast, 100%. So Patreons went up. So Multitude, we do a bunch of different things. We make shows for other people. And we also sell ads for ourselves and for other people. And we also do like consulting. But we also make all of our own shows. I produce 3 shows plus this. And it's
fun.
And
you guys sell Crocodile on the side, which I think is cool.
That's true. And that's the secret sauce.
Yeah, that is.
So, and also I want to say we have also not taking VC money at all. We just started it from scratch.
Well, if there's any luck, get that little $50 million.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you guys to drop Bill Simmons money on me. That's what I'm waiting for.
So I also think that something that I feel really excited about and hopeful about with podcasting is that, you know, we'll see more of these little constellations of small businesses working together. You know, so, you know, Eric at Multitude, you are a small business. Defector is a small business. And, you know, my hope is that we can continue to like build these little networks where we're supporting each other. And that feels like the most sustainable thing to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old school blog community.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a community. It's like an affinity group where everybody sort of broadly speaking is like wanting the same things. And those things are like to continue to do your shit and get paid and like have insurance, not to like eventually exit and live next door to fucking Shane Smith or whatever. Like, that's not important to me.
You guys make jokes about this all the time, but I just want to say the stuff that happened in blogging in your entire careers has just gotten faster and faster and faster. We see this in blogging. We're seeing with what happened with The Athletic. We're seeing this in streaming. We're seeing this on YouTube. And podcasting, I think, is the fastest thing, going from Spotify's acquisition of Gimlet and Parcast in 2019 to now. It's been less than 4 years. It's the fastest boom and bust cycle here of the carpetbaggers coming and trying to make money. So it's like your experience is really important. It's just happening faster and faster and faster, but it's all the same. I mean, Roth, you already talked about it. Mike Schur saying that companies looking at writing like MTV, like airplane parts manufacturing, again, that 6% ROI, that's happening to all digital creation. And I think it's exactly what Alex said about leaning on each other, making something sustainable, and hopefully small businesses can do it together so we can thrive and flourish.
Yeah, and if I may end on an up note on this, I think that's essentially correct, that as much as this consolidation harms the art form and workers and all that stuff, there will always be, always people who have both the talent and the wherewithal to do this on a smaller scale and put out quality products. And that's true across everything. I mean, I remember when David Zaslav and when they launched Max and they went and they listed all the directors and writers and stars as creators in the credits on the menu and everyone got all pissed. And someone tweeted out that this was happening and they were like, well, they're doing this. It's so over. And I was like, what's over? Like art? Like you think art's going to fucking end?
Yeah.
Like that's not how it works. Like people who want to find a way, find a way. And people should always remember that in the face of, you know, a lot of corporate fuckery and all that stuff. Now, we have to talk about sports. And we're going to talk about sports in a way where we're going to deviate immediately from the actual sports part, because we're going to talk about disgraced cyclist Lance Armstrong, who decided to start asking questions this week about the fairness of trans athletes in sports with a new show of his featuring legendary moron Caitlyn Jenner. Now, to pre-defend himself, Armstrong tweeted, "Have we really come to a place and time where spirited debate is not only frowned upon, but feared, where people's greatest concern is being fired, shamed, or canceled?" Now, irony aside, Alex,
Can you just read the next sentence that he wrote, because it's so fucking good? It is classic Lance Armstrong brain.
I would, except I didn't paste it into my
document. As someone familiar with this phenomenon, which is like, you mean like when you fucking with got cheating? Caught cheating and you wrecked your life. And then there was 2 years of stories about what a fucking asshole you were to everyone you'd ever been across. Was that that's the phenomenon that you're familiar with?
As like, a bit of a criminal myself.
Seriously.
I'm getting very tired of this play call, because it's clearly a Trojan horse into transphobia, which itself is a Trojan horse into homophobia, which itself is a Trojan horse into just the general oppression of civil rights all across the country.
Reactionary anti-human politics and things of that nature.
You know, I'll ask you, Alex, does this play call work, do you think, on some level? Or do you think people are kind of getting tired and kind of identifying it right away?
I'm tired of it. I don't know. If it works, it's working on a completely different population than me.
It works on Florida. Like Floridians, yes, it works.
Sure. I don't know who is into that, though I can imagine somebody is, because whenever there's a guy just asking questions, there's like 10 more guys who are like, yeah, he's just asking questions.
Right.
Why can't we just have a civil discussion about whether or not blacks can vote? Why can't we do that without people getting mean about
it? What's bizarre about that to me is that, so I obviously, you know, I don't know who this works for. I do know it's not me. The thing that I'm always startled by, I guess, is this conversation hasn't moved or changed in years. It's not even a conversation. It's just the sort of this going over of the same sort of talking points. And it's one thing when you are like a rich, famous dunce, and the biggest thing, you know, that you could imagine, the worst thing that you could imagine happening to you is you get yelled at on Twitter. Like, you're never going to like be hurt materially in any way. Mm-hmm. Like Lance Armstrong will never pay for his many crimes against everybody that he's ever interacted with. And everybody.
Oh,
sort
but
of
he
knows
has that. Already paid. Wrong.
He had reputation.
He was canceled. And that
you know
was
how hard it was for him to get Caitlyn Jenner to come on his fucking dumb podcast.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like, how do you not get bored with this? Like, this is the only conversation that this whole tranche of like people that I guess are like sort of finding out that they're fascist, that's like their personal journey, that this is like, that is the only conversation they want to have.
That's what's killing me, Alex. I'm waiting for this to get played out. Like I want to say to someone, you're still talking cancel culture again. Like, that is so 2019 or whatever the fuck. Like, how, like, this is uncool. Like, even among uncool people, this should be uncool now.
The problem is that, like, the people who are still doing this have not been brainwormed by the internet for the last 10 years. So they haven't had these conversations, like, to the very end of where they could go.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so they're like, yeah, but you know what? Cancel culture, pretty crazy.
Yeah, have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
It's a whole new thing. Yeah,
I mean, it does. It goes back to, like, bell curve shit, where it's like, well, how come black people haven't prospered in America. It's not just because white people are mean. Like, there has to be something inherently wrong with them. Like,
that's
real
the other thing
Sullivan
with just
touch.
Asking questions is that, yeah, the questions can be 300 years old. Like, yeah! These are, like, all the, yeah, the, like, race realist shit that you still see, that fucking, like, Elon, like, boosts. Those are, like, the oldest and most discredited ideas in American history.
They've been answered. The answers have already been provided many years ago. All you have to do is do a fucking Google search, man.
That Lance Armstrong sucks ass, and there might not be much more to say about it, but...
That is true. So in that vein, it's time for the podcast of the week. Every week we remember a podcast of yore. Not a Hall of Fame podcast necessarily, but just a podcast that makes you think, hey, I remember that podcast. Alex, you ready to remember a podcast? Because this week's podcast of the week, The Ricky Gervais Show. You remember that show, Alex?
I truly don't. I did not know this existed.
So ordinarily, this would be where we'd be like asking you if you remember the person that played left field for the Red Sox in 1994.
Oh, great. Okay.
So even in attempting to make an accommodation, Drew still had to bring fucking Carl Pilkington into it and make it weird.
No, you know why I have to bring it in? Because you know why? Because it was a fucking great show.
People really liked it. I never really listened, but...
It was before Ricky Gervais... became like whatever the fuck he is now. And it was him and Stephen Merchant and Carl Pilkington just having like outlandishly absurd arguments about like whether or not worms could eat breakfast or something.
Amazing. Were we in here?
We're talking like late 2000s.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, this is like Neolithic, like stone tools used
back when it was
podcasts.
iPods.
Yes,
where you played your podcasts on.
Wait, right, an art form named after a product that does not exist anymore.
Nice. But it's true. Were you weren't in the game at that point. Like you were younger,
I wasn't
but, like,
producing, but I was listening to podcasts as early as 2005.
Do you remember what the early, like what were, who are your guys, I guess? Were the early ones?
I'll tell you who my guys were. My first guy was the Ben Lee podcast. Do you know Ben Lee, the Australian musician?
Yeah, he dated Claire Danes in the 90s. And I was like, this
holy
fucking
shit.
Like,
yeah. Dude, I haven't thought about Ben Lee since the 1990s.
Okay, he had a podcast that was like 6 episodes. And it was just, he just like talked about like music and like Hinduism and whatever, like stuff that he's into. And I was like, this shit is life-changing.
Yeah.
I was like 14 and I was like, I've never heard anything like this.
Yeah, that was, it's funny to like, especially now that, as you said, that we've all just completely destroyed our consciousnesses with online, just like burned a big hole where all of the thinking parts of our brain used to be. But thinking back on how like cool and new this shit felt, where you're kind of like, this is like, I don't know this guy and he's talking to me, like that is... I mean, I remember it like in terms of not, I think with like early pods, I don't know what the earliest podcast that I listened to was, but I remember,
it could have been Simmons. I mean,
that's what I was going to say. Like, as weird as it is, it was like reading Simmons at like my first job out of college and being like, damn, I didn't know you could write about sports like this.
It was like Simmons and like Adam Carolla. And they were like,
oh my God, Adam
Carolla.
Yes.
And now look at, this is the thing also, is it makes it
easier. I went on Adam Carolla's podcast.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Well, because it was back before, it was pre-Trump. It was before he became, again, the fuck he is now.
Yeah.
And like, I'd listened to his podcast and I'd laughed. I had enjoyed the podcast because he was just sort of like, he was the Loveline guy. And like, he'd have comedians on and they would just say funny shit. And like, they would talk about like Heart to Heart and like all this shit that I grew up watching and laughing about. And I remember I went to his studio in LA and it was a garage, which is very appropriate because he's like a proud gearhead motherfucker. And I had a flight to LAX later that afternoon, and they made me wait for a good long time to the point where I was like, I think I'm going to miss my flight, all because I'm going to get fucking bumped by Adam Carolla. But then I got 5 minutes with Adam Carolla to plug a book or some shit like that.
Oh my God.
And then I left. And then like a year later, he turned into like the shittiest asshole who ever
It's really funny God. that was like early enough podcasting that you needed to like physically wait to be let into the room to do your bit.
Well, because it was such a big moneymaker and still is, where it's like it was operated at like a talk show on television or something like that. Like,
can I read a tweet from Adam Carolla that I think of as being like one of the canonic you're never coming back, you've destroyed your mind posts in my life? This is from August 13th, 2020. Everybody's having fun on August 13th, 2020. Maybe the peak of everybody just doing like well and being depression. Normal. Yeah. So, Adam Carolla, 4:56 a.m. Eastern time. So still, more American males now wear bracelets than eat stew.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I remember. Let's remember some tweets.
One of those things where that is like, if you post that, someone should rappel through a window into your home and 5150 you for 2 weeks in a mental institution.
Oh, my God.
When I think like, about the ideal of masculinity, I think of a motherfucker eating Dinty Moore.
Eating stew. You need to, what you need to do is lose that bracelet and get some venison in a pot for like a couple of hours. With just, you know, carrots, onions, celery. It's not complicated.
No, but, no manly man has ever worn a bracelet.
Stop being gay, man. Take off that bracelet.
Stop being gay and start braising meat.
Let's open up the fun bag. These are real questions from defector readers and distraction listeners. This one is from Jeff, and this one's kind of for you and me, Roth. Jeff writes, this year I started running, which really loosens up the bowels. I've used that time to catch up on the distraction. The first time I felt the pressure and had to duck into the woods, a new episode had just started. And so I'm squatting near some questionable weeds.
Oh, come on, man.
Hang on. I'm in the middle.
It's not getting better. I know that it's not going to get better.
For the record, he wrote this, not me. Okay.
All right.
So Jeff continues. So I'm squatting near some questionable weeds while you're yelling, we're back at me.
Oh, my God.
I'm now a veteran woods pooper and have had steamy piles come out while both you and Roth are talking. But we're back triggers me the most. So I am proud to say that I am this man's cup of coffee and I keep him regular. So
Jesus Christ.
I have no comment on this matter at this time.
Brian writes in, Alex, if a member of Congress made it his or her pet issue to prod the Justice Department into getting some serious antitrust cases going, would American voters care? Pretty clearly dominant market share is a precursor to enshittification. But do enough Americans care? And would that congressperson build an admired national profile from this activity? There was no shit in that question. I just want that noted.
Oh my God. I'm shocked at the this question coming
this
after
like the alpha and the omega
pooping.
Of the distraction experience.
Oh my
there.
God.
Little bit of sweet,
really, like,
bit of sweet
half
and
the
sour.
Questions are like in, you know, sort of thoughtful stuff, and then half of the other ones are like, if you found like a sandwich in a toilet, would you eat it? Yeah, it's like
the implosion of the submersible plus the NBA redraftables.
God, I'd like to believe that people would care about a strong antitrust platform. But I don't know. I have worked in media my entire career. And so I'm personally like really scarred by like Google and Facebook like taking over the internet and the way that media companies have conglomerated in my career. So and you know, I see that like connection directly impacting our democracy. But I don't know. I don't know if regular civilians who haven't spent their entire adult lives on the internet would feel the same way.
Yeah, I want to believe, though, because I think I'm more or less where you are on this, I think, Alex, but that I also feel like the thing that I want to believe would matter in this circumstances is I don't think that people like the way that things are. Necessarily. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean
that's
that,
always true.
There's it's always, it is always true.
Do you remember the CBS also, poll where they were like, how do you, like, it was like 60% of Americans think are worried about things. Like, and it was just that. Yeah. I swear
same.
To God, that's
extremely
that's,
same.
That's my yeah, favorite, was, my favorite poll question. It's like, are things going in a good direction or a bad direction? And it's kind of like bad. That. Most people are gonna be like, yeah, it's kind of, it seems pretty bad. I don't
they'll
know.
Cite like, that shit in the Washington Post and be like, well, President Biden is assuming office right when 40% of Americans believe that America is trending in the wrong direction.
Right. What can he do to make people
asking?
Believe in the future? What kind of targeted tax cuts for businesses and enterprise zones can make people? But to me, though, with this question, that like if you look at like if you start with like Google and Facebook, which are obviously the ones that have probably fucked us all on this call over the most professionally mm-hmm. over the course of our lives, they also don't work very well. Like, mm-hmm. it's not the sort of thing where, like, Google at this point, like, even just as a search engine is not very good. Mm-hmm. And this is, it's true with Amazon. If you try to buy something on there, it's all, like, fucking Alibaba dropship crap. You have no idea if it's bootlegged or not. That, like, that, when things get big, at that scale, they get a lot worse. And I feel like that is, if somebody was actually using it, not just to sort of like grandstand in a cheesy congressional way, which is obviously a huge if in this.
Yeah,
scenario,
I mean, that's Bernie's Twitter feed, essentially.
Right. But if but if it was like Bernie qua Bernie, like if he's asking these questions, or even if it's just like, not to get like too like epic lib on it, but if it's like Katie Porter with a whiteboard or something like that, watching these people get their feet held to the fire and maybe then seeing some policy that improves your experience of moving through the world, I have to believe that that still would have some kind of impact. Because if you stop believing that, then like, what are any of us even doing, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure actually I agree, Roth. I do think that people are more affected by it, like you, like the three of us, if it affects our jobs. But if it's a if it affects you as a customer, it is, I believe, even if the product is worse than it was a year or two prior, that is not as vital an issue for you as gun control or abortion or something like that. And I have to tell you that, like, I don't really have much of a beef with Google in terms of like, yeah, the search engine sucks, but I can find shit elsewhere. And also, like, Gmail still works for me. I've been using it for over a decade. And I on Amazon, like, I know when it's a third party seller because it says if it's a third party seller. So I can figure out whether or not, like, I'm going to get a free return or I'm going to get charged $3 because I got to drop it off at fucking UPS or whatever the fuck. So
the thing I'll say for Amazon, though, is that, and this is again where, you know, maybe the ship has sort of sailed on some of this. It doesn't even really matter to them if you have a good experience buying their shit anymore. That's not their business at this point. Like, if they're a web hosting company.
No, they're the understory of the internet. I mean, AWS is where all the internet is housed, and that's where they make their money.
Yeah, which is
and
tough.
An AI.
This is why we got to have the big blockbuster congressional hearings before I have to untangle my feelings about enjoying having watched several seasons of Bosch on Amazon Prime from my feelings about how big companies are supposed to be allowed to be.
Last question. This is from Mike. I've had the pleasure of meeting both Rick Riley and Bill Simmons. Both were in completely random places where I wouldn't have expected them to be. I met Riley at 2 a.m. outside a bar in Barcelona. I just want to note that that's exactly where I would expect to see Rick.
Yeah.
And I met Simmons in San Francisco before Metallica played with the symphony orchestra there. So my question is, when in what completely confusing context will I meet you guys? And yes, if this gets to the pod, I hope it is a reason to hear Roth say Barcelona.
I'd be happy to say Barcelona. That's
Alex, what would be the most random place a normal gossip fan could meet you?
Oh my God. I mean, I did meet a normal gossip listener at Archie Moore's, which is this.
I know Archie Moore's.
You know Archie Moore's?
Yeah, Kate went to grad school in New Haven, man. Nice. So I've had the French fries at Archie Moore's.
Is that a paint store?
Yep.
it's like a, I don't know, like a pub, like a neighborhood pub that does like bar food. And I was like digging into a huge pile of French fries.
Is it a gastro pub or just a pub?
No. It's like a pub. It looks like Cheers. It kind of rules, actually.
Yeah, it's great. And I just heard this voice that was like, hi, are you Alex? And I was like, Jesus Christ, like, not right now. but it was great. It was very nice.
The one that I'll add, which I talked about this with Eric a little bit on the little non-episode that we did last week. Drew and I had dinner together and then went to the Normal Gossip show the opening night in New York, and we were identified by some listeners coming in together. And I wonder if people think of me and Drew as being like Bert and Ernie and just always kind of like moving as a matched set through the world. Like, like every now and then he just checks in and is like, what's up, Roth? And I'm like, oh, I don't know, how's it going? But I don't think we get to do that. Getting recognized anywhere is extremely weird, but I do generally enjoy it. The one that I'll say just to match our readers' questions is that I once saw I didn't meet Jay Mariotti, but I saw him in a salad restaurant on Venice Boulevard in Venice, California, and he was wearing shorts.
Cool.
So I've seen Jay Mariotti's knees, which is one of those. Yeah, didn't ask for it, but there they were.
Well, obviously, my answer is it would be completely confusing to meet me while you're shitting in the woods. That is my answer.
Yeah, that would be it.
It's time to wrap up the show. Alex Sujung Laughlin, you've been a lovely guest, and I should note, that Normal Gossip is on tour, and you can still buy tickets right now if you go to normalgossiplive.com. I'm seeing five more tour dates. I'm seeing, Alex, yes, you can correct me where I'm seeing Chicago. I'm going to say it in Huey Lewis's voice. Austin. Los Angeles.
So many tickets in Los Angeles.
Please harder, rock and
buy
roll
the tickets.
And then San Francisco and Seattle. Oh my God, you guys get to go on a West Coast swing. That fucking rocks.
We're doing a road trip. It's going to be so cute.
Yeah. Are you actually road tripping up the West? That's really nice. That's cool. Yeah.
Wait, are you really? You're going to drive up the Pacific Coast Highway and all that?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to do it. Kelsey got us this absurd Airbnb outside the Redwoods that has a sauna and a hot tub.
Nice. You got to bring Colby with a K with you to make sure that you are safe along the Pacific Coast Highway.
If you want to understand what Drew's talking about, you have to go to the live show. It's really good.
You do. Eric Silver is our producer. Brandon Grugel is our editor. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. Ads and production services are by Multitude, and you can subscribe to Defector.com right now. Just go to Defector and hit that subscribe button. You can also email us at distraction@defector.com, or even call us at 909-726-3720 and leave a message. That's 909-PANERA-0. Alex Sujong Laughlin and David Roth, thank you guys so much. We'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Ooh, bye.
Bye. Thanks.